Hour number two here on the Lowdown. Thank you so much for being with us. Ken Rudolph has chimed in on his favorite SNL skit. Of course, it's one we haven't seen, and I'm frantically trying to find it and can't. Ken texted us and said, my favorite SNL skit is very rarely ever seen. It's Damon Wayans in his final skit on SNL where he completely ruins his character by making this cop overly effeminate and ruining the skit. It's legendary because he got fired by Lorne Michaels immediately following the show. I don't think I knew Damon Wayans was on SNL.
I remember him appearing there. Maybe he was a cast member. Obviously he was, but I don't remember.
There's a few like that. Like Sarah Silverman was on it.
Yep. So there's a blacklist, right? There's an SNL blacklist of people who can't come on the show, right?
I think it's very few. Like Sinead O'Connor.
Right.
That's who I mentioned.
Okay, that's who he... But it does exist.
Yes. Probably Kanye now.
Really? I don't think so.
Now? He's been on a ton.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
There's some good entries, though.
Kanye had a busy day. Did you see Kanye's passcode?
No.
For his phone?
Uh-uh.
For some reason, I guess Face ID doesn't work on Kanye's phone. It's 0000.
Okay. If I get my hands on the phone, I'll know how to...
Yeah.
Get in there.
There's someone really smart somewhere who knows how to hack Kanye's phone just knowing that.
Probably. That's true.
Maybe that person can figure out why 2-2-1 equals a 500
That's
record.
Right.
Jason Jones of The Athletic, he covers your Sacramento Kings. He's going to join us here in just a heartbeat as your Sacramento Kings are at the Golden 1 Center tonight to take on the Utah Jazz. We also got the start of week 6 of the NFL season, which means you got to get your fantasy football roster set. We'll have to check with Nate Lundy. He's going to be with us at 2:05. I think the over-under that I saw this morning for Sunday night is 60.
I believe it. I mean, it seems like that should have a ton of points. I don't think they'll disappoint. Both quarterbacks you'd want to play.
Mm-hmm.
Every skill play. I think one thing we'll ask Nate. Both teams have a lot of skill players, and will you pick the guy that gets, you know, they can't all get points seemingly, or can they? I mean, do you rest one of the receivers of the Chiefs or the Patriots, and which one would it be? Or do you just, if you have them, play them?
Yeah. Nah, I'd imagine you just play them because you never know.
And hope for the best, yeah.
Yeah, you never know. And, I mean, Patrick Mahomes spreads the ball around.
Yeah.
I mean, he throws the ball. And, I mean, that's what Tom Brady's legendary for.
Yeah.
So we'll talk with Nate Lundy at 2:05. Happy to bring in Jason Jones, introducing him for the first time as a member of The Athletic.
Yeah.
Jason, did The Athletic get you a new phone?
No, they did not, but and I'll call them up right next after I get off. But I did get a new laptop, which is very important. My laptop was old, heavy, and falling apart, and the battery lasted about 9 minutes. So it was time for a new one.
Well, you sound good. I'll say that. Yeah,
you sound
crystal clear, man. The Athletic must have done something to your phone signal. It's the Kings and the Jazz tonight. Like Jason and I were talking about this to start the show. What do you think we're going to see tonight? You think we might see a dress rehearsal from the Kings, or they might just kind of lay out knowing they're playing the Jazz for real in 6 days?
I think they're going to a dress rehearsal. I mean, they're not good enough to try to say, "Hey, let's not show anything."
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, you know, everyone knows where everyone runs, so you're not going to really surprise Utah in the first game of the year or something, but they need as much practice as they possibly can get. I don't think they can afford to go into let's not show off everything. And it's not like football where you're going to come out with a completely new, you know, set of plays and formations. So they've got to kind of go through the thing. And, you know, the Leafs has only played in one game. So he needs to get some more run in with these guys. And my guess would be you get these guys a good run tonight and then sit some of them tomorrow, you know, with a back-to-back.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you. Well, I'll start with the first. You know, there's obviously some new faces on this team. Bielitsa played his first game. It's the only one we've seen from him. What did you think in his debut as a King?
You know, just taking away the fact they were playing a bunch of guys who aren't NBA players. I like the dynamic he created offensively, just from the fact that the Kings, we all know, have way too many centers. And you can't play all these bigs together. He's a big who's different from the other ones. He can step out and hit the three, which gives him a niche the other guys just don't have. So I like seeing that, and I'm kind of interested to see how, over the course of the season, how they're able to use him we create some space because everyone talks about they need to give De'Aaron more room to drive. So, can when you do have him out there with De'Aaron, can De'Aaron take advantage of that, get out and, get into the lane and create for the teammates?
Do you think he'll wind up being a starter by the time next Wednesday rolls around?
I think so. I don't see why you would put anybody else out there with that first group right now. I think you almost have to start them out. They want to start a game with, say, a Willie and Willie and Harry or Willie and Marvin. I don't think you want to start a game out like that.
So, what do you think the rest of that group? What's your projection then for the five that opening night next Wednesday against the Jazz? Obviously Fox, but who else do you see out there then?
I'd say Fox, Willie, Belita, Justin Jackson, and because Bogey's hurt, I'm going to say Buddy. I don't think, and I know they want to play, multiple ball handlers. I don't think you can start a game out with a 6'3 Fox and a 6 foot or, generously 6 foot, 5'11 Jody Farrell or Frank Mason. So I just think you go, you go with Buddy. And then you can bring Frank and Yogi off the bench together to give yourself a couple of, point guard types to play, because you're going to have to have, a couple of ball handlers to play with Harry and Marvin. That's going to be a young second group. So that's why I would go. I think Buddy can go either way, whether it be starting or off the bench. But I would assume that they're going to go with Buddy to start the year. That's the way I would go.
Jason Jones of The Athletic with us here on The Lowdown. Man, has anybody been gifted more of an opportunity than Justin Jackson? Like, what is the internal response to him?
they're waiting. They want to see, that guy that flashed in the summer league. Can he do it when against NBA players? And we know, I know he's in a tough spot defensively most nights, but, what they don't want to see is him disappearing. Even if your shot's not falling, keep shooting. Be a pest on defense. Get a steal. Do something. And, really, especially with Bogey out, this is his time to seize that role. They don't have any other small forwards. He just got to do something with it. There's really no way around it. I know even during the summer, even during media day, he was kind of, I call it surly Justin, where he was kind of like, he knows people say about him and write about him. Well, you can't talk like that and then go out and then show why everyone was writing and talking about you in a negative way. So he's got to do something. And I know last season Vince Carter told me more than once he wasn't worried about Justin because based on how things went in North Carolina, it took Justin a year and a half or two to kind of find his way. So it's still early in his career. I just don't know how patient the Kings, will be. And once Bogey gets back, it would surprise me to see them just plug Bogey in that spot. And then that would cut, and bring Justin off the bench or, see him his minutes dip.
Jason, the three most experienced players, NBA experience-wise, on this team are Costa, Zach Randolph, and I guess Iman Shumpert. How will they be used, if at all, this season?
As of now, sparingly. I don't see it, really the edict really is now. It's kind of funny because, going after the season, it was all about, hey, these young guys have to earn their minutes going into the next season. So you go into training camp, but you pretty much know Zach and Costa and Shumpert aren't going to play. Barring anything, injury-wise, the plan is not to really use them much at all. And I'd be shocked to see those three play much, especially early in the year. I think you have to kind of they're going to give these young guys a chance to pretty much sink or swim. And that's where I think Dave Yeager's in a tough spot. At some point, you need to win games. And we can say what you want about, we know he has a young team. At the end of the day, his record is his record. And when a coach gets fired, no one ever puts on there, says, hey, you got fired, but you got a young team, so it's okay. So at some point, I think Dave is going to you wouldn't surprise me to see you go to Zeebo at some point because the offense is struggling. You guys can get buckets because, the way the team is constructed now, they're going to struggle to score still, I think. They can talk about playing fast. They want to speed up the tempo. But they're still probably not a good defensive team. So even as they're playing fast, they're just giving the opponents more chances to score. So I think there's going to come a point where you're going to need some of those vets. To me, Shumpert is the big one because they traded Garrett Temple, and they don't really have a wing defender right now. And at some point, you're going to need to put someone out there who can play some defense on the wing. And to me, I'm kind of just have the countdown of when do you put Shump out there, or do you just let, you know, let's say a young Justin Jackson get beat up by a guy, you know, by a vet, or do you go to a guy with some know-how? So to me, of that group, I think Shump is the guy I look at and say they have to at least at some point give him a real look.
Yeah, Jason, I'm not sure. Hopefully you were glued to your radio listening to us yesterday. We were talking about you in the article you wrote about Willie Cauley-Stein and his relationship with Vlade Divac and the importance of this upcoming season for Willie. We were having a discussion how it seems like with players coming off of their rookie deal, there's no middle ground. Either they're signing the full max extension or they're gone from the team. Is there a middle ground, or can there be a middle ground with Vlade and a player like Willie Cauley-Stein? Because I don't know that anybody, whether a Kings fan or Vlade himself, would be comfortable giving Willie Cauley-Stein a full max contract after or a full, you know, second max contract after this upcoming season. But is there a possible middle ground for these two, or is it all or nothing?
I mean, there's a possible middle ground because I think even at his best, you know, say things go perfectly for Willie this year, I don't think any other team is going to give Willie max money. I just don't see that. I don't see any scenario where he's going to be a max player. And I just firmly believe the Kings will pay, you know, will pay him more than anybody else will. You know, I don't see a team swooping in with, like, you know, 15, 18 million a year for him. And so I think, you know, provided he, you know, he improves, I just think the Kings will pay him more. The thing is, too, is that folks forget he's eligible for the big deal. You know, if he just kind of just muddles around, the Kings make him restricted and he'll have the qualifying offer. So we could go through this whole thing again next year. You know, he could end up, you know, going, you know, playing like a Rodney Hood, playing on a qualifying offer, that 1 year tender, and then go unrestricted next year. So I know Willie wants the big contract next summer, but we could go into 2020 with this. So
yeah,
there's definitely got to be a middle ground, because when it usually comes to NBA, guys who get the big money, if Willie was a big money guy, they would have gave him the extension already.
Yeah.
So I think they know, Willie knows, and they know he's not that guy. The question is, especially based off of how he does this season, where do you slot him at? Does he get more than, you know, Julius Randle got, what, $9 million a year? I think a lot of people would pay Julius Randle more than Willie.
Yeah.
But, so, you know, but you know, would the teams pay him, say, 10 or 11 a year to keep him, just as opposed to let him test free agency? I think it's going to be kind of a delicate thing for him, but I think if the Kings have a multi-year deal out there, Willie almost has to take it rather than risk going out there and ending up like a Rodney Hood or one of these guys who has to sign a qualifying offer.
Jason, obviously the team drafts Bagley high. They had Giles waiting a year here to get him ready. We've just talked about Willie. How are they? What do you think the organization's plans are for a guy like Scalabi Sierra?
He was going to sit and wait and watch, and maybe he'll get a chance down the road. You know, it's a tough spot for him. It's because, you know, that last part of his rookie year, there was so much excitement about him. But even then, it should have been tempered. I mean, he had that good game against the Phoenix Suns, but you look back, it's against a local guy, Marquise Chris, who hasn't exactly lit the NBA on fire either. And I never really care about stats from two bad teams in March and April. No one, those kind of end up being just pickup games.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Scal's bigger this year. He looks stronger, but he's not going to be the priority. The priority is going to be Harry and Marvin amongst that group of young bigs. And Scal can essentially wait his turn, you know, to get a shot out there. And the main thing that kind of held Scal back last year was defense. And they're not going to be a good defensive team now, more than likely. So they're going to give Marvin and Harry every chance to learn that part of the game. And then from there, I guess the Scal kind of wait and see what happens. I mean, I like Scal. Everyone there likes Scal, but there's no way you can play five or six bigs.
Yeah.
especially in today's NBA, there's no way to play. It's hard enough playing Willie, Harry, and Mark, you know, in Belice. It's hard enough to play just those four. You start throwing in Scal here, throwing in Zach there. Now no one's really getting helped by the situation.
Do you think Dave Yeager is the coach for the long-term future for the Sacramento Kings?
I don't know. I mean, this is still kind of a new scenario for him because, well, it's not new now, but, you know, he came from a situation where he had a lot of vets, and they were always in a win-win mode. So he had to adjust his style. He's had to kind of adjust, you know, it's a lot more teaching. And the thing about, remember when Dave was in Memphis, he had, you know, it was known that he had went out to Minnesota to look at that Minnesota job when he was still in Memphis. And with the chaos going on out there, who knows if that job opened? You have to wonder if Glenn Taylor, you know, he knows Dave. Maybe he calls the Kings and says, hey, I liked Dave before. Maybe I can get – maybe I'll want Dave now, because, I mean, that Minnesota thing is just crazy. And I could really see a situation where everyone's going and they want to start over. And if you're Dave Yeager and, you have the young Kings, and let's say Minnesota does call, and you've got Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Wiggins, you know, say what you will about them, you know, letting Jimmy do what he did to them, you still got an all-star big and a pretty talented wing. You know, you can do some different things with those guys as opposed to the Kings, where we're looking at, you know, three years away maybe from being an eight seed. So I think that, you know, to me, that's the situation to watch, is to watch that Minnesota thing and see if the Timberwolves reach back again like they did while Dave was in Memphis, reach back again to try to get him out there if the Thibodeau thing doesn't work out.
You brought up Minnesota. The Kings, before the first kind of start of this Jimmy Butler drama, were at least mentioned as a team that could be involved if Minnesota got in a deal with some other team as maybe a third piece. How likely do you think, maybe not even just that deal, Jason, but the fact that they do have some cap space and some money, you anticipate the Kings being involved in any kind of deal here coming up soon or within, you know, a few months?
I do, just because they're the only team in the league with, like, real space, you know. They can take on, you know, if they're not talking about taking on minimum deals. And they've got enough small contracts, you know, relatively speaking, you know, Scal on a rookie deal, you know. You got Shumpert, Costa, and Zach were all expiring deals. They got enough deals where they can move guys around. You know, Ben McLemore, who I believe is an expiring deal. So they've got enough small contracts to create more space, take on, say, I don't know, you know, say things get completely, you know, crazy in Minnesota, and they say, I'm not reporting this, I'm just saying hypothetical. Say they say they want to dump Andrew Wiggins for whatever reason. They got enough pieces in space to create space to take on a big contract. Mm-hmm. Well, most, you know, the team in the league can do that now. Yeah, it's a hypothetical now. Don't no one run out there and say the Kings are going to get Andrew Wiggins, but they can do something like that, or they can take on a player and say, hey, we'll take on this player if we can get a draft pick. Mm-hmm. Even though, I mean, they've said they don't want to get much younger, they're young enough, but one of the ways in this league you add talent is through the draft, and they don't have a pick. And unfortunately for them, they're probably giving up a top five pick this year.
Yeah.
Or are coming up next year.
Jason, congrats on the new gig at The Athletic, man. Glad to have you on, as always.
Anytime, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. That's Jason Jones of The Athletic with us here on The Lowdown.
Well, kind of fits in.
Now we're so sad. Like, I feel like
I know.
We were riding high, and now we're talking about the Kings, and it's like, it's like just kicked in the face with the reality boot.
Well, I think that they're in a spot where, I mean, people don't have high expectations. We're in the same group, right? I don't know that I'm going to sit here and go, oh, I see 40 wins. I mean, I don't, but I do like their roster. But again, you can like the roster and still be a team that just doesn't win that much.
I don't know. Like,
I guess I say I like the roster. I like what some of the potential is, but that's, we're waiting on that.
So of the three local shows on this station, we cover the Kings the least. And part of that is because I honestly don't know how to cover them. Like, what are we supposed to do? Like, yay, De'Aaron is really good. They lost by 20. Mm-hmm. But, man, De'Aaron is really good. Are we going to do that? Like, are we looking at that for 82 games?
I sure hope not. But I think that's what you have to look at is growth.
But if you don't have high expectations, what else are we looking at?
I think the individuals. Again, I think I might have said this last year, and it's probably going to be a similar, because I don't think we got there exactly. But I'll say it: there has to be an answer to what the core is and what the future is. I think people would say, "Oh, it's De'Aaron," and it's.
But that's not a core; that's a player,
right? But I mean, he's part of it. I mean, it was De'Aaron, and it's Harry, and it's Bagley, and it's. Buddy, oh, but, is it? But I don't know that we know that 100%.
But Bogey comes back dealing with the knee, and he's trying to get himself healthy. So let's say he comes back in, what's it, October 16th-ish or something like that is the start of the season, 17th? Okay, fine. Say he's not normal till the middle of November, or comes back in the middle of November. Okay, he's not starting to feel normal till January. And now we're trying to evaluate from January to the, you know, what, beginning of April?
Yeah, but that would be him, but also him with others.
Well,
right,
and... Hey, I don't know. Buddy was really flowing before Bogey got, and now we're trying to figure out all of this. It's really hard to cover this team.
Yeah,
when there's, I guess the hope is it's almost like get through this season, establish what you were talking about. Because if you've established the core, that means you've established the direction, and that creates a different feel headed into next year. And it feels like this year, it's like, man. I'm excited for the basketball season to get here, but in terms of the Sacramento Kings season, it's like, oh, man, just give us something to be happy about.
Yeah, and I think if you establish whatever the core is, three, four, five guys that they feel really good about going forward, I think then your next free agent signings aren't, hey, we need veterans for the – now they've been – like Fox will be 2 years, and it'll be his third year, and if it's Buddy, it's his fourth – like they're young veterans then all of a sudden. Now you're not signing – hey, we need that 33-year-old that we may not play, but just to get it. Now it's, no, we're getting people here that are probably going to be the add-on pieces to this young core, and that's hopefully where the growth is, but we're still not there yet.
There was a story about DeAndre Ayton yesterday. I'm curious to get your thoughts on. If a college athlete gets paid, does it matter once they're a pro? The tea was being spilled yesterday. We'll explain as the lowdown continues next. We attempted to recover from our ultimate downer segment talking about the Sacramento Kings for damn near 20 minutes by watching the SNL skit that Ken Rudolph sent us. Now we're more depressed.
Yeah.
It wasn't funny.
That one wasn't.
And I didn't think he said the name of the skit is Mr. Monopoly, and Damon Wayans, I guess, was fired for it. What did you say the year was for this?
No, but it's early 90s.
I guess he was overly effeminate, which wasn't.
But he was
consequential to the skit.
Yeah, he was a small part of the skit. I don't know.
It's just the skit wasn't good.
And that's the thing. Like, there's obviously people that don't like Saturday Night Live. It's not their thing. They say, oh, the show's not funny. I would say it's not funny all the time.
No, it's
but there's times
not.
That it hits that becomes things of our culture and society, like regular phrases and different things. But, yeah. But then there's times where you're like, man, that was a really good episode. There are four or five good sketches, news, topical, maybe the music was good, all that stuff.
Me and Jason, we usually break down SNL the week after an SNL, and then we'll go over that. We'll say like, oh, what'd you think of it? Oh, it's good or it's bad. And even when we say it's bad, there was something that we could find in it. It's like, oh, well, that was really funny.
Yeah.
But the rest of it was terrible. It's almost like what you and me do with Monday Night Raw.
Which I just can't bring myself to watch anymore.
Me neither.
Like, WWE has gotten to be like a really dirty company. Like, I just can't get on board with anything they do anymore. I think I'm out. I'm not positive. Like, I haven't canceled my network subscription.
You're not out.
I honest to God think for the first time in 30-something years, I'm out. I can't do it. Like, I don't have the time investment anymore.
Like, you won't watch the next?
No, they just had one, right? Saturday. I didn't watch it. I think they have one. Is it Sunday? They have another one coming up where they're taking gobs of money. Okay. They're taking a lot of money from a particular foreign country that won't allow women to be on the show. It's really ugly and dirty.
And have been involved with killing a journalist.
I mean, massive amount of money, which is why they won't back out of it.
Okay.
It's pretty gross. Like, I just can't. I can't do it. I don't think I can do it. I think
then
I'm out.
War Games comes around and Survivor Series comes around.
War Games? What is that?
It's the they took it from WCW. It's the
they're not doing a pay-per-view for War Games, are they?
NXT.
Oh, NXT is. Okay. Well, yeah, not watching. You texted me to watch it last night. I was like, Chris, I can't.
It was good.
I'll try. But I was going to try to cheer us up with this.
The category was numbers, and you wrote a letter V. Well, I tell you what, my friend. V is a Roman numeral. So despite your best efforts, you answered correctly. Let's see what you wagered. Suck it, Trebek.
What is that? What is the context to that?
That's Sean Connery would always get all over Alex Trebek on this bit. Just clown him as much as he could.
I need something that I know is going to make me laugh. I went to an SNL skit that I knew you guys liked, and that did not make me laugh.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, okay. I know
this.
Don't
worry, go.
I'd be doing myself a disservice and every member of this band if I didn't perform the hell out of this.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
Is Will Ferrell the best SNL cast member ever?
Yes.
I would say yes.
Oh, wow. That was definitive. I am stunned by that.
He's the Michael Jordan of SNL, to where it's everyone agrees it was him.
Wow.
And then who's your favorite after that?
Wow.
Well, also, I mean, it's personal preference, but I've heard, like Chris said, like cast members just talk about him. Like, he's just so gifted. And like, he can make things, some sketches that weren't great, that he can make them funny.
Well, I was looking at the text line and Will Ferrell's name kept coming up over and over and over again when we asked. SNL debuted, by the way, 75 years ago today. That's the context behind what we're talking about. And we posted a question on the Sports 1140 KHDK Facebook page. What is your favorite SNL skit? And the cowbell one is like, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
But so is Will Ferrell. The cheerleader, the Will Ferrell cheerleader bit is funny.
Yeah, I like that. I like Will Ferrell as Harry Carey was sensational.
I think, yeah, we've got that. Yeah. We'll save that for later. What's Will Ferrell's best movie?
It's between Anchorman and Step Brothers for me.
I really like The Other Guys.
That's good, too.
Desk Pop. That movie, I'm telling you, Mark Wahlberg makes that movie so freaking weird. Like, his delivery in that whole movie is so odd. I mean, it is funny. I recognize that it's funny. And the whole, like, he was a pimp in his, like, previous whatever is funny. I love Kicking and Screaming, dude. That movie is so great. I absolutely love the scene where he's in there trying to get coffee and the line is too long.
There's always something with, like, Will Ferrell characters in movies where there's something super random. Like, that one, he's never had coffee ever in his life, and then he finally has it, and then he just goes crazy.
And then Mike Ditka's random role in the movie is Mike Ditka. And I know Old School is great and Anchorman. If Kicking and Screaming is on, if I get home from the studio and Kicking and Screaming is on, I'm watching it.
People are now saying Elf, Talladega Nights. I think Talladega Nights. It's good.
They're all. He's not like. I'm trying to think. Adam Sandler's made a lot of junk.
Yeah. Will Ferrell has, I think, made a few.
Has he?
Some clunkers. Yeah.
I never really got into Night at the Roxbury, which is that an official SNL movie?
Yeah.
Gotta be, yeah.
Okay.
I never saw that one.
Well, that they had a couple sketches on there.
Night at the Roxbury?
Yeah. Like the first one was with Jim Carrey.
Oh. I thought that was like a Will Ferrell bit. Like Will Ferrell and, what is it, Chris Kattan?
Yeah.
Don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. Oh, wow. Talladega Nights is great, too.
Yes.
So is Old School. I feel like Old School. He's great in Old School, but that doesn't feel like a Will Ferrell movie. It just feels like a movie with, like,
that he's
really
in.
Funny people in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but he's like, not the main. I mean, right. He's part of it. But
Anchorman is yes. Will Ferrell's movie.
Yeah.
Talladega Nights is Will Ferrell's movie.
I think, and he's got one coming out again with John C. Reilly, him and those two together in Step Brothers.
I think that's a bad idea.
Do you?
Because then you see him as Step Brothers.
Well, it's you didn't see them as stepbrothers when they did Talladega Nights.
Oh, that's true.
And they're playing, it's a Sherlock Holmes movie.
Oh, no.
But I feel like they just vamp those lines. Like, I think they just go, and I know they've got to be
just get Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly on the phone. We're not even going to write a script. We're just going to record.
Yeah, like some of the stuff in Step Brothers, you know, like, I am going to, you know, like, when they'll roundhouse kick, I just feel like they're making stuff up. I'm going to get a samurai sword. And it's like, wait, what? I feel like they're making that stuff up, which makes it great.
Autographed by Randy Jackson, of course, because you don't not get Randy Jackson. I feel like that movie's on every single day.
Which is good.
One of my favorite parts of that is when he buries him alive, and then he just starts walking away. Oh, going to sleep good tonight.
you were yelling rape at the top of your lungs. He just had this weird look in his eye.
Yeah.
I guess in retrospect, maybe that's not supposed to be funny, but it very much in the context of
the
movie.
In the context of the movie.
It's very funny. Yes. So continue to send your essay. Now it's turned into a Will Ferrell movie. Sorry, I got us. The other guys is really loved. I get it. There's just something about Mark Wahlberg's delivery in that movie that I've just oh, is he doing this on purpose? Why is he talking like
and
this?
And the one I've never seen with those two, and they've now made two of them, was
Daddy's Home.
Yeah.
That's coming in here on the text line also.
Did you see those?
I saw. So there's two of them, right? Like John Cena is in the second one.
He's at the end of the first one.
Right. I did see the first Daddy's Home. It didn't do it for me. Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's all that good, but Will Ferrell's funny in it.
Yeah. And now they're their dads are involved. Like, aren't their dads involved? Is that the
in
bit?
In this one, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Or the second one.
So DeAndre Ayton, apparently, more is coming out. How much did the FBI spend on this investigation, by the way? Was this really necessary? It's like they're confirming stuff we suspected, some new. But does anyone really care if DeAndre Ayton took, $10,000, $15,000, $40,000, $100,000? Does anyone care if DeAndre Ayton took any money?
Yeah, not now, does it seem to be. And there's a few people that seem to get caught in this or caught up in it, and that's it. It's never any huge name seemingly in this.
Well, DeAndre Ayton's a huge name.
Well, but was he caught?
Dennis Smith is a huge there's people saying, what he did. We had the, Brian Bowman Senior, his testimony last week, in which he was laying out all of the money that he got from offered from the various schools. It was $100,000 from this school, a job from this school, a job, a house, and a car from this school. This isn't surprising to anyone. It's like, okay, you're confirming this for us.
Yeah.
So what?
Yeah. What do you do? What happens?
It's a really big deal if you're getting $100,000 and not claiming it on your taxes, and if you're laundering it through other companies and just giving random amounts of cash to people.
Well, when you frame it like that, I suppose it is. But how do we know that they're not claiming it on their taxes?
I mean, that's why I would think the FBI would be involved.
Yeah, then you know it's there.
The FBI has gotten involved in some silly... the United States government was involved with Major League Baseball on multiple occasions, mm-hmm. and major sports leagues on multiple occasions.
WWE.
Were they? Did they? That's right. That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. I just what is. So you asked DeAndre Ayton at media today. Hey, did you take some money? Yes. Okay. Was it Laramie Tunsil? Was it because he was the gas mask guy,
yes,
right?
On the night before the draft.
Often forgotten because the smoke mask thing happened 5 minutes before the draft goes live on ESPN. Was his post-draft press conference in which he admitted to taking money. Well, it's like at that point.
Yeah.
Throw
it all out there.
You just threw your coach under the bus and your university under the bus.
Yeah.
But in terms of Laramie Tunsil, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and then sometimes when there are actual sanctions, like after the fact, for Reggie Bush, for example.
Give the Heisman Trophy back.
The Heisman Trophy's back. Oh, those wins don't count. We all saw it. I mean, nobody doesn't think that USC wasn't an undefeated team or that Reggie Bush wasn't a Heisman Trophy winner.
Do you think that Heisman Trophy is still sitting at Reggie Bush's house right now? Do you think they actually, the NCAA sent, Big Vito or something, Tommy Two Fingers to go get the Heisman Trophy from him?
It's at Tommy Two Fingers' house.
It's in Reggie Bush's trophy case.
Yeah, isn't there? There's got to be a couple of them, right? Doesn't the school get one?
All of those trophies, there's multiple versions.
They probably took it away from the school. Wink, wink.
Well, the player, when I went to Austin, I know Chris just came back from Austin. I went to the University of Texas's football facility, and it's basically first of all, as many great football players have been there, you should just call it the Ricky Williams room because you walk in, man, and it's just Ricky Williams trophies, and it's a gorgeous facility. But yeah, every trophy the player gets, the school gets a duplicate. Mm-hmm. Like you go to the University of Tennessee and you see all their player of the year, Candace Parker's trophies, all of them are lined up there. There's duplicate copies of all this.
They want to show that off.
But Reggie has his. Maybe USC can't display theirs anymore.
They can't.
But there's no way anyone came and took Reggie Bush's trophy away.
Reggie Bush did give his trophy back.
Would he, like, drop it off at mailboxes, et cetera? And
he said that he gave it back, and the Downtown Athletic Club has put it into a storage unit in the New York City area.
Hmm. Put a stamp on it.
So he gave what is that called again? The Heisman Trophy Trust Board? Isn't that what they're
Something
called?
Something like that, yeah.
So that's who has it. Because the Downtown Athletic Club, that's where it's held.
Yeah.
Okay. I would have bet everything that he didn't, and it's just sitting in the most prominent spot, too, in his trophy room.
Yeah.
You don't like talking about USC, guys. I'm sorry.
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. Dude, this has been a terrible 1 o'clock hour. This has been the most depressing 1 o'clock hour ever.
Let's play some Pointer Sisters.
I'm down for that. The NFL is glorified college football. Who said that? And what does it even mean? It's next. Not the first time this song has been played in the studio today.
Yep. Sing it, June.
And we've decided, you're positive that's June?
Yeah, I feel good now about June. June might be the lead. Ruth is in there and what? Issa.
Yes, we were researching the Pointer Sisters before today's show. What were you doing this morning? Jeez. So we've decided, though, that our theme music for the Andrew Luck bit is the Pointer Sisters. I'm so excited, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
absolutely.
That's solid. Because that's a happy song. It fits Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
I feel like that song should be playing at his locker.
He tricked us a little bit yesterday. He wasn't unhappy, but it wasn't the same normal Andrew Luck tone.
No, it didn't give us the feels.
Yeah.
Didn't give us the feels at all. Hey, how about another SNL skit from Facebook that we've gotten? I'm not familiar with this one.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'm just a caveman. I fell in some ice and later got thawed out by some of your scientists. Your world frightens and confuses me. Sometimes the honking horns of your traffic make me want to get out of my BMW and run off into the hills or whatever. Sometimes when I get a message on my fax machine, I wonder, did little demons get inside and type it? I don't know. My primitive mind can't grasp these concepts. But there is one thing I do know. When a man, like my client, slips and falls on a sidewalk in front of a public library, then he is entitled to no less than $2 million in compensatory damages. And $2 million in punitive damages. Thank you.
I'm starting to wonder if I think SNL is funny anymore.
That was years ago. Unfrozen Caveman
Lawyer.
What
the hell was that?
That was the Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer.
That's so funny.
Okay.
That was years ago.
I'm not letting you're not. And next time I say get audio of something, just say
you
no.
Told
just
me
look me straight
the
in the
audio,
face and say no.
You told me to get the audio from what people were picking on Facebook.
Well, just because someone picked it doesn't mean they're right. Like that wasn't even remotely. Who was that?
Jason, how many times have you gone to someone and said, hey, I'm just a caveman. I don't understand your world.
No, there's no way you've ever said that to someone.
I have, but probably 30 years ago, 20 years ago.
Who's playing that character?
Bill Hartman.
Yeah, who's real? It was really talented.
He was like the what Kenan Thompson is now.
Okay,
like you just put him in and it makes it funnier.
Yeah,
is that what that is?
Uh-huh.
Okay,
yeah.
There's
a frozen caveman lawyer.
TJ says it's a very underrated sketch. All right.
Apparently, you're not rating it at all.
It's not rated for me.
Yeah.
If we did did you just pick a bad part?
No, it does it a couple of times. He's done it a couple of times, and that's the gist of it. It's just a caveman.
Okay. I'm ranking that with the Ken Rudolph skit that we were watching a second ago that wasn't funny either. How about some other audio? This audio actually, I don't even know what this means, quite honestly.
I think in some ways it's pro football is more of glorified college football. Maybe the transition, it's a more similar game than what it used to be, you know, when I first started. So it's much, I think football now is removing some of the physical elements of the game. It's just, it's more of a space game and, you know, you see a lot of kind of college plays, you know, more in the pro game now than what I remember when I started. So, you know, that's just kind of how things have went over the last bunch of years.
WEEI right there. What is Captain America talking about?
I mean, I was trying to get more details because I saw the quote before, but like, what does he mean? When he's talking about the space and maybe the more gimmick offenses. I mean, we're seeing more end arounds, more passing, more just, I guess he's talking about that space too.
But he was talking about contact as well. Like college football somehow isn't physical.
Yeah, I feel like there's not as much protection going on in college for the quarterback as there is in the NFL right now.
Certainly not for the quarterback. I mean, they put the targeting rule in effect before the NFL did. And actually, college's targeting rule is a little bit different than what's been labeled the NFL's targeting rule. Okay, I was really hoping you have an answer. I didn't know what he meant. I don't get it. I mean, unless you're talking, I don't feel like there's a influx of, we call it, college football offenses, like the gimmick offenses. I don't feel like there's an influx of that in the NFL other than, you know, the play his team run and they failed at. And then, the Browns running the Philly, obviously the Philly play from the Super Bowl. I don't feel like there's a bunch of gimmicky stuff going on in the NFL.
The one thing I would say, though, is that I remember when the NFL, and I don't know how many years it's been, maybe a decade or so, that they adopted the two-point conversion, and there was a lot of talk then, like, these guys won't go for two. Extra point, they're not going to give up points. No coach will be aggressive enough to go for two, like two and the win, and now it's happened. And more people, people do go for two at different times, not on just their little scorecard that they have, that this is the right time to go for two. I feel like coaches sometimes are more they'll do some riskier things, and I think that happens a little bit more in college too. But I don't know. I don't know his full meaning behind his quote there.
Speaking of coaches, Bill Belichick isn't here for the nonsense. He doesn't care about these roughing the passer penalties.
They're not new rules. I mean, you're not allowed to lead with your head. You're not allowed to body slam the quarterback. You're not allowed to hit him below the knees. You're not allowed to hit him above the shoulders. And if he's out of the pocket, then some of those rules change. And if he's in the pocket, you're allowed to horse collar him. But I mean,
there you go. Bill Belichick obviously now doing his media sessions through FaceTime in a broom closet.
Sounds like a hostage video.
Goodness, good. Not shocking at all. Not surprising at all. But there are four teams in the NFL that have not been called for a roughing the passer penalty.
That's it.
Obviously, the New England Patriots are one of them.
Wow. Well, again, I think there's good intentions in all these things.
Von Miller hasn't been called for one. He's getting to the quarterback, it feels like, every 5 seconds.
Yeah. I think there's a good idea and good intentions, but it's also, did they go too far with something? We were talking about Clay Matthews both those weeks. It just didn't seem like it was a true penalty to me. Mm-hmm.
I mean, is he teaching it? Or, like, what's happening in practice that seems to be different with the New England Patriots and perhaps these other – now, these other teams, and I should have taken the time to look up exactly who they were. Are they bad pass rushers and just not getting to the quarterback, i.e., Raiders. You know who?
Yeah.
But I think Arden Key has one.
You're
against
right.
Baker Mayfield.
You're
he
right,
has he a, did. Which, was, by the way, that was an awful call.
Yeah.
It was an awful call against Arden Key. But are they teams with bad pass rushers or – I mean, I'm comfortable. I mean, the Patriots are disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
So is he coaching differently? Is the Patriot motto, the Von Miller motto, and it's, dude, go for the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where some of the players have been doing that, too. If you have the opportunity.
It's what Khalil Mack does.
Yeah.
It's what Von Miller does.
Yeah, at the same time to get a sack, a knockdown, strip the ball, get it going the other way. Sometimes I think where these other problems have happened is the ball's out already. It's already been thrown, and then you still hit the guy and land on him, and that's what's being protected this year.
All right. Let's open up the text line right now, the Jiffy Lube text line. Austin, I'm going to need you to call us back, buddy. I see you over there on hold because we're going to step out. We'll come back. You got fantasy football questions for week 6? We got you. Jiffy Lube text line 441140, our fantasy football expert and host of the nationally syndicated Fantasy Football Hour, Nate Lundy, joins us next on The Lowdown.